Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it.
Black, white, right, left.
Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Whiskey Congress is back in session, but we're not drinking whiskey today. In fact, I'm drinking a Spanish wine. I don't feel qualified to do wine reviews, and we got a lot to talk about. So let's jump into it. I mean, impeachment, public impeachment hearings wrapped up this week.
Yep.
In my opinion, there were a lot of bombshells here. A lot of bombshells, and I did what I usually do, and I listened to or watched CNN and MSNBC, and then I also watched and listened to Fox on satellite radio. Didn't get to the Patriot Channel this week, I don't think. But again, it's like they're talking about two different things.
Yep.
It's nuts. To me, the biggest one was George Sondland basically said, yeah, all the stuff that you're saying happened. We did do things based on putting political pressure on Ukraine, threatening to withhold or withholding military aid with the hopes that he would do research on a political rival. And to me, that's impeachable.
I thought that was, you know, his opening statement was really strong. I thought he kind of got picked apart a little bit over time, and it wasn't a great defense by, Jim Jordan and his,
right.
He's so ridiculous. Yeah, and Devin Nunez is even worse. But they did poke some holes and you know, some of the other GOP representatives did kind of get him to come around and say, this is my opinion, this is what I thought, this is what I inferred based off of, you know,
right.
Whatever.
Fair.
I thought Fiona Hill was a little bit stronger, a lot stronger yesterday. And I mean, like, listen, she's been, since she testified, she has been the apple of the eye of, you know, political commentators and journalists
sure.
across the board. Because, I mean, listen, she came in with a laser focus. They couldn't really push her around. There was no room to put any holes into what she said. And I think, you know, Sondland said what he said, and then he kind of backtracked, and then she came in, and then she really kind of filled in the gaps to where he went soft, she stayed hard. And I came across
yeah,
weird, but you get what I mean. You know, she... Here we go.
And because of the British accent, so did I.
Right. But, you know, I mean, and I thought she gave a really solid testimony, which, you know, did not really put Trump in a good light.
Right.
And while it's basically wrapped up, I don't think we have the end of it because you have a couple people. When the main person I want to hear from is John Bolton. John Bolton had direct conversations with the president. Right now, you know, he's been subpoenaed. There are a couple people who are fighting their subpoenas in court, which is why I don't think this will wrap up immediately. You know, maybe the first, you know, after Thanksgiving, maybe we will see the articles of impeachment. But I think because I believe is. Those court cases where they're fighting the subpoenas and trying to figure out if they can testify or if they have to testify, because, you know, the White House is saying executive privilege, Congress is saying you have to testify because we subpoenaed you. So
whether it'll be public or private, it'll be another issue.
Right. And then so those particular members of the administration are all trying to figure that out. John Bolton is one of them. And so once that decision comes down, if it comes down to where the court says you need to testify, then I think it'll be a little bit more time before this all wraps up. So in terms of impeachment, listen, I get it. We have a president that is a guy that I don't like. He is very divisive. He is a lot of talk. He puts a lot of rhetoric out there. You know, racism, misogyny, you know, nationalism, all these sort of things. You know, nationalism in a way that skews towards white nationalism and, you know, attracts that particular crowd. We talked about Katie McHugh and
right.
Stephen Miller, you know, on the show last week. So, listen, I don't think that he is particularly good for the country. But I do think that ultimately, he won an election, and we have an election coming up around the corner. But that's not the reason why you don't impeach him. But the reason why I have issues with impeachment, and I have issues with this process, even though we're looking at this and, you know, Jordan Sondland is saying Fiona Hill is basically backing it up. And I feel like if John Bolton testifies, I feel like John Bolton is the ultimate bombshell. I feel like once John Bolton testifies, if he does, then I think that is the bombshell that everyone is looking for. That will be the testimony where he's going to be like, because why did John Bolton resign?
Right.
And it's not going to be over Iran. It had come out, you know, months ago that John Bolton had said the thing about he didn't want to be involved with Giuliani and Sondland's drug deal and everything else. Right. He wasn't talking about an actual drug deal. He was talking about pressuring Ukraine.
The feel of it. Yeah.
So listen, I have a law degree.
Yes, you
do. I'm a lawyer. Practice. I spent a lot of time studying constitutional law for a number of reasons. So I want to go through impeachment from what it looks like from a legal and a scholarly perspective and try to explain to you why I feel that while I get the idea of impeachment, I don't believe that this is the way that we take this president down. I believe the way you take this president down is through the voting box.
All right. If I can get my piece in for it, yeah. I was not for impeachment because I thought it was a poor political strategy that would result in nothing. I have flip-flopped. I'm now saying I believe this is impeachable, and I've said the whole time, Congress, do your fucking job. Don't be hacks. So originally I thought this was purely a Nancy Pelosi reacting to political pressure. I no longer feel that way, but I do not have the academic background you do, so the floor is yours, sir.
So
I yield to the gentleman sitting across from me right now.
Yield to me.
I've been watching too many of these.
Yes. You know, first of all, I agree. I still think it's a bad political move. I think it's a bad political strategy. I think it will backfire on Democrats. I think that whoever gets the Democratic nomination is going to have an uphill battle to fight because Trump and his team are such good spin doctors. Right? They're very good at spinning things no matter what happens. You know, I mean, Trump could literally... You know, you and I were talking yesterday, and I said he could piss on the floor, and he would spin it. Oh, I've got such good aim. I meant to piss there. It's so perfect, right? I mean, that's the way this guy operates. And you know, if you want to get inside his head and diagnose him and put him on the couch, narcissism, blah blah blah, yada yada yada. But the problem is that the Dems haven't figured out how to counteract him just saying, "Fuck it, I didn't do it," or "Fuck it, I did do it, and what the fuck are you going to do about it?"
You never got me down, Ray.
Right. I mean, that's exactly what it is. So, impeachment.
Yes, go.
"Will seldom fail to agitate the passions of the whole community and divide into parties the entire electorate," right?
Okay.
So, that's from Alexander Hamilton in the Federalist Papers, Federalist 65. Okay, so what he's saying there is that anytime you bring this issue of impeachment up, right, you immediately are going to draw a line down the center of the country and people are going to take sides. And that is exactly what we're seeing here, right?
Sure.
And this was the Federalist Paper. This is before the Constitution was even fucking written, right? So what he's saying is once you engage in this particular behavior, you're going to immediately see basically the entire country jump into a state of tribalism, right? Article 2, Section 4. "The president shall be removed from office on impeachment for and conviction of treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors." Right?
Right.
So the big question is, one of the biggest questions in academia and in legal scholarly law is, what is a high crime and misdemeanor?
Right? Okay.
Like, what qualifies that? So you have so many questions that don't have answers. And so it's easy to kind of jump into this idea or the position of whatever works to your political leaning, right? Like, so we don't like Trump. We have something that's we know is sketchy and that is not quite above board. We've got this issue of impeachment that's come up. We've already all been divided. And so we say, you know what? You did it. I don't like it. And so therefore, we shall impeach you and you should be removed from office. Right?
Okay.
That's the that's the thought process, right? Like,
I'm,
and we're just taking it step by step, right? And so I have to step back and try to be as objective. I think it's important for someone, me, and most people to step back and try to be as objective about this as possible. And so we have to kind of correct for that idea of tribalism that happens in these particular situations. And so we look at it, when you look at how Madison kind of broke down what the classification of the various things that a president can do that should...
Sorry.
Should land... Jim's like, I'm going to need another drink for this. The things, like... So what are the things that the president can do that should get him removed from office? Well, if he's incapacitated...
Right.
If he's negligent, or, you know, you have this idea of perfidy, which is perfidy means, you know, dishonest, sketchy, just not above board. I mean, you know, all
not,
the words...
Not worthy of the office or whatever.
Right. I mean, like, you know, perform badly, whatever. So those are the kind of things. And so is Trump incapacitated? You know, people are trying to make that argument, but no. I mean, he's nuts, but no, he's not incapacitated. Has he been negligent? You can really make kind of an attenuated connection. I mean, how much time does he spend watching TV and on Twitter? Golfing, you know, whatever, you know, fighting, you know, these things that he fighting these messes that he ends up creating, like that could technically be considered negligence. But perfidy, that last one, is really kind of the big one that has us here, right? Because you have this specific conduct that people are saying has had this direct impact or negative impact on our trust of his being in the office of the president. Now, not all presidential misconduct necessarily constitutes the ground for impeachment, right? Like, that is something that has been universally accepted by legal scholars from, you know, 1865, all the, you know, 1765, 1776, you know, 1600 all the way to now.
Right.
Right. Not all presidential misconduct necessarily gets us to the point of he needs to be removed from office. And so legally, the law can lead us to the point where substantiality becomes the issue, but the law can't tell us what is substantial, right? And again, that comes from Madison. And the reason why that's important is because we know, like, so we have Sondland's testimony where he says, well, this is how we were operating and this is what was going on and Trump was doing all these things. And then, you know, I'm assuming that Bolton's going to come in and he's going to say that based on his conversations with Trump, we had all these things going on. But my question then becomes, so what exactly are we saying here? That, so are we calling it actually bribery? Is that because the problem with bribery is that you don't necessarily have the actual legal components for bribery, right? Like, bribery is an actual crime, right? And the one thing that you're missing is the actual measurable benefit that Trump would receive from this.
Okay, but I got to push back on that, because if I tell you, if you kill my ex-wife, and I've never been married, so I can't control for that, I will give you $10,000. And you say, sure, but you never kill my ex-wife, and I never give you $10,000. I still bribed you, right? Or that's actually murder for hire, but... Right, but
a lot different.
Yeah, it's a lot different. But my point is, if the act doesn't occur, but the attempt to commit the act occurred...
No, still... that's not what I'm saying. That's not,
okay,
that,
I'm sorry.
That's not the legal point. Like, so the legal point here is, what is the actual benefit? It's not that Trump received the benefit or not. The question is, what is the actual benefit, and can you measure it?
Oh, okay.
So by him saying, you need to investigate Biden, right? What is the actual measurable benefit? How does that benefit Trump? You could say, well, he's his legal rival. Political rival. Okay, yes, he is. But again, so the Ukraine investigates him and his son and Burisma and all this other stuff. You still haven't told me how that benefits him. You can say, well, maybe, like, well, since he's running against him, then that could impact voter opinion of Biden. And then, you know, he doesn't get voted into office, or he gets investigated and is found guilty of something and blah, blah, blah. Okay, that's nebulous at best, right?
Okay.
Attenuated at best. Because here's the thing. One, Joe Biden is not the only person running against Donald Trump. Two, there's an argument to, like, there's, based on the polls, some polls have him as the number one front runner.
At the time that happened, though, he was considered to be the front runner, right?
He was considered to be the front runner, but it was close. I mean, Elizabeth Warren was close.
Sure.
Bernie Sanders was close. So the idea that he was the number one front runner, undisputed, and he was the guy that was going to go against Trump. See, the issue is, you like, okay, fine, he has him investigated, but maybe that benefits Trump, maybe it doesn't. The other part is that, listen, if Biden somehow did, like, and I don't believe that this happened, but let's just say Biden does put his son in that position, right, for to get money or the Ukraine or whatever.
I'm pretty comfortable saying if Hunter Biden wasn't Joe Biden's son and that therefore came with the political power of that family, would he be hired as a $50,000 a month consultant or whatever?
No,
he would not.
$80,000 actually.
Oh really? Okay.
Actually, it was $83,000 a month.
All right.
For 3 years, which comes out to about $3 million.
Not a bad gig if you can get it, especially no, if you probably did absolutely nothing.
Right. And so the question becomes: all right, so let's say you can make some sort of corruption connection. So if you do make that actual corruption connection that Hunter Biden and Joe Biden had some sort of scheme and they were funneling money, like basically taking state dollars, sending it to the Ukraine was giving it to Burisma was then laundering it, giving it to Joe Biden or Hunter Biden, and then Hunter Biden is kicking it back to dad, that's a problem.
I don't think it happened.
I don't believe that it happened.
And by the way, Lindsey Graham has launched a Senate investigation into the Bidens regarding the whole Ukraine thing.
Okay.
So Lindsey folded again.
Right. I mean, well, Lindsey is...
He's a...
I still...
Paper mache.
Oh, God. It's ridiculous. But what I'm saying is... Let's say that, like, okay, we don't know that it is true, but hypothetically, I'll go with it. That sort of thing, actually, if that is the scenario that happened, that is the thing that could actually benefit the United States. It's not necessarily something that benefits Trump, right? If you've got a vice president that is putting his son in a position to take advantage of the United States giving money to another country, then that is indeed corruption, and sure, that is something that is putting country ahead. Now, so, listen, we both know that's bullshit. But the problem is, we're talking about removing a president, right? And I need, for me...
It's never been done, right?
Right? Like, for me, for you to say that you're going to take my president away, whether I like the guy or not, and I do not, and I don't think he's good at his job, but the idea that you're going to remove my president over something that I can sit here and say, like me, just me and you, two dudes on a podcast, and I can go through and I can say, listen, I got some issues with this, right? Like, here's a scenario where this could actually make sense. I don't believe that based off of that sort of information, even though because right now we have, well, we were operating under the assumption of, I assumed this, you know, like I heard this through this person, through this person, through this person who heard it through Trump. You have this Giuliani character, right? Like, I mean, like, you have all this sort of shit going on. Is it good? No. Do I like it? No. Should there be a repercussion to the president? Sure. Can we censure him? Yeah, let's do that. But I don't know if removing him is the appropriate move, and I don't know if I feel comfortable removing a president of the United States because, one, half the country doesn't like him. Like, literally, they just they don't like him. They don't like the way he talks. They don't like the fact that he uses social media. All those sort of things. Like, you're going to remove my president, right? And partially destabilize my country because you don't like the way he talks on Twitter.
The reason I flip flopped is because I thought that was essentially the meat of this case until recently. And I've had some time on my hands lately, and I've been watching a lot of this stuff.
Jim, get a damn job.
I've got a job, you fuck. I worked 4 hours today. It was a brutal day. But you got no job. But anyway, watching this, it's very clear to me that he did use a foreign power and his power as president to influence them to do something on his behalf politically. You know more about the law than I do. Maybe I'm just, spitballing here. But to me, that is a breach of the public trust. And, what is a high crime and misdemeanor? I don't know. I also don't know what a well-regulated militia means in the Second Amendment. So there's lots of things that these guys wrote. And you people always talk, the founding fathers, the founders. They did put together some pretty amazing documents. I mean, the fact that these things still work today, for the most part, is fucking amazing because, when they wrote these things, they had to shit in a bucket. I stole that from John Stewart. John Stewart talks about, I'm Thomas Jefferson, I'm the President of the United States, and I have to shit in a bucket.
I mean, and, here's the other part that I also have an issue with. The deadline for the Ukraine to get the money was right. September 30th.
Okay.
Right? So the government had, now again, I'm putting this in the most favorable light to the to the president, to the White House, to the administration. Right? Not because I'm a fan, but because you need to.
Well, and you're a lawyer and you always try to look at the...
And so you had up until September 30th. Did the United States release the money to the Ukraine?
Yes.
Did they go beyond the date in which they needed to give that money?
I don't know what date it finally got released.
It was released like September, sometime between September 11th and September 15th.
It was released after they learned that there was an inquiry into their behavior, right?
That's true. But did they release it?
Yes, they did.
Was there an investigation into the Bidens before they released it?
No.
Okay, so, I mean, you're telling me that in order for them to get the money and that this bribe had to happen, like that there was a bribe and that there was a quid pro quo, all these things had to happen, you're like, well, but they only did it after the fact. Well, that's true, but they still did it and none of those things occurred. Right? We know those are things that actually happened. Now, again, coming back to reality, we understand the timing, the sequence of events, we've heard the testimony. I believe that John Bolton actually has the smoking shotgun with another shell racked in it. I believe that firmly. But if we don't hear from John Bolton, now if we hear from John Bolton and he comes and flat out says, listen, this is Trump's plan all along, this is what he wanted to do, he told me, I laid it out, you know, once we brought in Rudy Giuliani, we knew we needed a fall guy, blah, blah, blah. Like if he spills, like if he does what Jordan Sondland did, but just more definitive with direct knowledge with, you know, that he spoke directly to the president, he took notes, he remembers, he's got it all laid out. That's a whole different ballgame, okay? But without that, I don't feel comfortable removing a president based off of what we have right now.
Do you believe it's worthy of sending it to a Senate trial?
My honest opinion, no.
Okay.
Now, again, if I get a testimony from John Bolton that confirms everything with firsthand accounts, conversations with the president, conversations with Rudy Giuliani, Volker, Sondland, all that stuff, and wraps it all up and puts a neat bow on it, then articles of impeachment, and then at that point in time, now I need the Republican Senate to move on this the right way. Because now if you have a president that's openly trying to manipulate another government to take out a political opponent, which again, like, and part of this is on Trump. Like, what the fuck are you doing? Why? Why is this the way that you're gonna go? Right? Like, I mean, like, there's so many different ways that you can attack Joe Biden. I mean,
you can't take Joe Biden down based on his record.
Seriously, like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, you created this mess yourself. And then the other argument I have for this is that again. If Joe Biden says, I'm going to sit home in Scranton or Delaware or wherever the fuck he lives and eat ice cream and give speeches and, you know, play with my grandkids and, you know, hang out and try to see if Obama will take my calls, but I'm not running for president, then
none of this shit happens.
Right. I mean, none of this shit happens. Right. None of this. And so that's your argument for.
Right.
But for me, it's hard for me to get on board with removing a president based on what we have here. This is a very serious thing that we're talking about. We're literally talking about a mild version of a coup, right? And that's what it is. You're talking about removing a person from power and replacing them with someone else.
Following a legal proceedings.
A political proceeding.
A political proceeding, okay, fine.
But a political proceeding, right? This is a politics.
A political proceeding that is in our Constitution.
It is. It is, and it's within. All I'm saying is you need to wield that power very cautiously.
Oh, completely agreed.
Right? And I thought it
was... that's why I flip-flopped.
And I thought it was wielded irresponsibly with Clinton. I thought it was right on point with Nixon. And now we're in a situation where I'm not sure this is the best way to go.
Can we agree this is way closer to Nixon than it is to Clinton?
It's closer.
Okay.
It is closer. I mean, because the whole thing, I mean, he was impeached over lying about getting his dick sucked.
Right.
I mean, and part of that is on him, like, just like, dude, Hillary knows.
Don't blow on the dress and you...
Or, I mean, Hillary knows. Like, Hillary didn't know. I mean, maybe she didn't know it was Monica Lewinsky specifically, but I mean...
Bill got around, let's face it.
Right. I mean, come on, everybody knew he got around.
Yeah. All right. You brought up the president's competency. Now, one other person who's regularly criticized and questioned the president's competency is one George Conway, husband of Kellyanne Conway. He did so again today on Twitter, and it did not go well. So the president went fucking nuts. He went on Fox and Friends, and he literally said, so Kellyanne Conway's on CNN, and Wolf Blitzer brings up that her husband had sent this tweet out, and she attacked Wolf Blitzer saying, you're just doing this for ratings, you're bringing up my husband to make this personal, that's, you should be ashamed of yourself, and I say, shut the fuck up, Kellyanne Conway, it's an obvious thing to do. But then Trump comes on Fox and Friends and literally says, this guy's a nut job or whatever, I'm not quoting exactly, I don't know what she did to him to make him that way. Again, not an exact quote, but essentially what he said. That's fucking insane. That is insane. He said on the show that coddles his ass that I don't know what this woman who's been working for me did to this man to make him say these crazy things.
Right, like it's a swipe at both of them. Like it one's is. On George Conway, you're crazy. And I kind of question George Conway a little bit too. But then, like, it's also a
direct... By the way, George Conway, lifelong Republican, as are most of the people who testified in the impeachment. Sorry, I want to get that in there. Yes.
But then it's also a direct swipe at Kellyanne Conway, basically saying, like, she's a crazy bitch and she must have driven him crazy. That is how it comes across.
That's how it comes across. And he wasn't even asked about it. He just brought it up. I mean, so, is that impeachable? No. It's funny. And it does kind of show, like...
Trump is a guy who we had all mostly forgot about, but he came back into prominence because of the stupid reality show about him and The Apprentice or whatever. Right.
That's true.
And the show was wildly successful because literally if you put anything on TV and make it a reality show, people will watch it. There's literally a reality show on some channel because I fell asleep one night in the middle of the night and I think I like randomly changed the channel, but I woke up and there's like a, it's like, Jersey Shore, but it's with like people from like Jacksonville and in Alabama. Or something it's called like that.
Florida Georgia Line, I believe,
or something like that. But it's the same thing as Jersey Shore, but it's with like rednecks down south. And it
have you ever been to Jacksonville, by the way?
Yes,
Jacksonville's terrifying.
It is not good.
All right, sorry.
But so like Trump is enamored with being in the mix of it, right? And so before it was reality TV and Hollywood stars, and now it's politics, right? But he's got Fox and Breitbart, and he's got, you know, OANN or whatever, and then not to mention CNN and all the like all these cable news networks. So he still gets to mix it up and be on TV and hear his voice and see his face and see his quotes.
But now it counts.
Right? Yeah, but to him, I don't even know if he knows that it counts, right? Like, he likes being in the center of attention. Like, he likes being the star. That's the main thing he's worried about. The rest of it, like, I think people have to remind him, like, hey, we are literally running a country. We need you to, like, do something that matters.
Right. And, you know, it's funny, and I've said this a bunch of times, I'm not a fan of Mike Pence from a political standpoint. But I also don't really respect him politically. I respect John Kasich. If John Kasich was our vice president, I think a lot of this would be different. He was offered the spot on the ticket and turned it down.
Was he really?
Yeah. He basically said, I want nothing to do with this guy.
And okay. I was like, I remember him really being anti-Trump. I didn't remember them offering him the ticket or the VP spot.
And I don't know if it went as far as an official offer, but he was the leading candidate, and he just said no, nothing to do with it. But damn it, John Kasich. And if I were in your, I've said this on the show. If I was in your shoes, I would have done the exact same thing. But I'm not, and I'm mad at you for not doing what I wouldn't have done. Hypocrisy spoken out loud. Did you watch the Democratic debate?
I was able to go back and see some of it, the highlights, and here's my issue. You know, by the time the primaries get around to Ohio, this thing will mostly be in the bag, right? Like, a lot of these people will be gone.
Yeah, true.
And it'll, by the time it gets to Ohio, it'll probably be down to at most 4 people, right?
Sure.
Maybe
once you get through Iowa, New Hampshire, and South Carolina, the field whittles out fast.
Whittles out really fast. I mean, because people run out of money. It's clear
they realize they got no shot.
Right, they have no shot. Things like that. And it's just like if you can't, if you don't get a boost through, if you're not in the top 3 by the time we get through South Carolina, then you're pretty much dead in the water. And actually, by South Carolina, if you're probably not in the top 2, you're probably dead in the water. But, I mean...
But you might not give up if you're...
Right, but depending on where you're at, especially with this field that we have coming up. So, no, I don't have a ton of interest because it literally is going to be kind of out of our hands in terms of, like, with this massive field. Now, listen, if there were only three or four people running, then I would be paying closer attention. But, I mean, more than half of these people are going to be gone by the time it's time for us to vote in the primary.
A debate with 10 people is just stupid.
It's ridiculous.
It is stupid.
I also don't have a good way of cutting the field down. Right, I mean, I think that they're saying, listen, raise money and rank in the polls, and we'll put you on stage, and that's probably right. Right, you don't want to make it all about money, so that you know people have to like so because then all that does that allows corporations to buy in. Right? Oh, well, I mean, and not that, that you don't they have do, that. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they still do, but now it does. They are requiring it to be a little bit more organic. I mean, corporations and super PACs are having to really, you know, do more groundwork. So yes, they're influencing, but at least you're getting more organic donations and things like that. So it's not just, hey, we got a check for, you know,
it's not George Soros versus the Koch brothers. And
right, which
and,
I saw, which is hilarious. I saw another George Soros story saying how dangerous he is to the Republic and blah, 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 and how, you know, much money he, you know, what he does and what he's owned, all that other shit. So
and it's 99% bullshit, by the way. I mean, George Soros, he became prominent because he went after George W. Bush.
Yes.
And he has been the Republican arch-villain since then. And
yes. I mean, and now, he's got a shit ton of nonprofits that have, like, he's got his foundation, and then you've got, like, his foundation has donated money to a ton of other organizations, right? So any organization that his foundation has donated money to, people linked to him directly, which, okay, you can because he has donated money to them. Right. And no matter what those nonprofits do, like once they get the money, if they do anything, you know, like if you've got some rogue Black Lives Matter group that, you know, is saying stuff about cops and or, you know, you've got some group that claims to be this, you know, neutral group fighting against racism, sexism, blah, 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 but they end up being Antifa, and then something happens, then they say, George Soros is funding Antifa, right? Like, that's how they make the connection.
Right, right. And it never gets questioned by the people who want
to
hear that.
George Soros is not going out and handpicking, like, I'm going to give you $10,000 to go beat up Republicans. Like, that's not how this works. Right.
All right, we could go on about this for a long time if we'd let ourselves, but there's a few other things that are more our show.
You know, you and I were talking yesterday, and you're just like, well, who do you like in amongst the Democrats? I don't really like any of them. I think Julian Castro is someone that I like. I don't believe that he can win. Andrew Yang is kind of growing on me a little bit. But again, another one who doesn't have really a shot. And I think if you had to put a gun to my head and say, who's the best chance to win? It's probably Elizabeth Warren. But I have an issue across the board with pretty much every single one of these candidates, and it literally centers around gun control.
Okay.
And the reason why is they all have the same sort of thing where in some way, shape, or form, they want to take guns. Right? They literally have said it. Like, okay, don't even go. Like, they literally.
It's not going to happen.
Okay, that's fine. But, like, you put a person in a position of power, you get, you know, like, if you have, like, in order for one of these people to win, like, you're going to need, like, chances are, if you can beat Trump, then chances are you can flip the Senate and you can keep the Congress. Right? So, you can flip the Senate and you can keep the House. So, if you've got basically a supermajority, then all of a sudden these ideas all of a sudden become a lot more realistic, right? And I do have a specific... I have multiple issues with a lot of these gun control arguments. I've evolved on them over time. And the more you look into history, I think you'll understand you'll understand my position better.
Okay.
Post-Civil War, Reconstruction, 1865, 1877, states institute black codes, right?
Institute
black codes.
Black codes, okay.
Do we know what black codes are?
I don't know specifically. I know Jim Crow. I know
right after the Civil War, you got Reconstruction, where they're trying to rebuild the South after the North has won. But they institute these codes. They're called black codes, and what they basically did, they said, "All right, newly freed slaves, you're free. A couple things you can't do though: you can't vote, no jury duty, pretty much any job that you can have that's going to pay you money, you cannot have, and you cannot own firearms, right? So this 1865, 1877.
Was this across the country or specifically the South?
Across, through the South, grew up through the North.
Okay.
So then we have 13, 14, 15 Amendment that come into play. And you got the 1865 and 1877 Civil Rights Acts, which basically kind of push back on some of that, right?
Okay.
But because of Reconstruction and because the North wants to bring the South back in, the South is really, really bitter and they're really pissed off about slaves being free. So right. The North basically had this compromise where they're just like, all right, listen, you guys come back and we, like, if you want to be dicks to black people, we'll allow it. Right. So in come Jim Crow. Right. Like, so basically from 1877 to literally the 1950s and some places longer, depending on where you are in the South, you had these Jim Crow laws. Jim Crow laws. Separate but equal. Here's some jobs.
Here's your water fountain. Here's your bathroom.
Right.
And
right. Like, so basically races were divided. But also here's some jobs you can't have. We're going to institute poll taxes. You're not always going to be able to vote. We can basically put you in jail for just about anything. Jury duty, can't do that. And you can't own firearms. Right?
Okay.
So,
I mean, not okay, but I...
And the big pusher of this, starting back in Reconstruction, is the Ku Klux Klan. Right? So your big first advocate of gun control is the KKK. Right? Because anywhere the KKK rose up, the first thing they did... They put up flyers and they put up these things that said black people can't own guns. And if they would go to black people's houses, if you had a shotgun or whatever, they would come in your house and they would have more guns than you and they would take your gun. Or they would allow you to give it up voluntarily. And then if you didn't, then they would go house to house. They would raid. They would take your gun and probably hang you up and murder you. Right. So your first gun control group is the KKK. Right. So you fast forward. You got Jim Crow. KKK literally terrorizes black people for about 100 years.
Right. I mean,
and black people it was really hard to defend themselves because they didn't have guns, because the KKK said they didn't have it. And then states adopted these rules. And if they didn't adopt the rule that said you couldn't have a gun, what they did was they made it so expensive. Right. And now remember, it was separate but equal. We couldn't work in the same places white people could work. Right. We didn't have the same access to the law. We didn't have the same access to anything. Right, so they would make guns really expensive. They said, listen, if you can afford it, you can buy it. But chances are, you can't afford it. So 99% of the black population couldn't afford it. Right, or they would say, okay, fine, you have to get a license. But it's really hard to get a license. You have to be able to read. You have to be able to pass this test. You also have to be able to pay for it. So not only did they make it expensive, they made it basically impossible for black people.
Restricted
to the point where you literally couldn't get it, right? Right, and you literally had people, governors, mayors, judges, in the South... Because white people were complaining. They're like, listen, I can't afford to get a gun. And then you had judges that literally came out. There was a judge in Florida who said, well, these laws really weren't meant for you, so we'll figure something out for you, right? Obviously, that wasn't afforded to black people. That was in the 50s. So you move forward. You got Civil Rights Act. You've got all these sort of things that kind of that happened that put things in place that make things a little bit more equal. NAACP. Ends up, you know, fighting and winning some court victories that open things up for black people and basically people in general. So to kind of neutralize this whole thing with the Second Amendment, right? Martin Luther King comes out and is just like, listen, we got to be able to defend ourselves against people that are wishing to harm us, right? Defending yourself in self-defense against someone that is legally trying to harm you, you know, isn't a crime. It's legal everywhere you go, right? Paraphrasing.
Yeah.
Fast forward. You got the Black Panther Party, right? Black Panther Party did a lot of good things, did some bad things, but for the most part, fighting for equality, fighting for black people, wanted to defend themselves, carried guns openly. Soon as that happened, what happens? U.S. comes down, all sorts of gun control laws are put into place. Why? Because Black Panthers, black guys, walking around the streets with guns, open carry, not cool. So...
Okay, do you have any... So... Gun laws really took a turn after the Kennedy assassination. I don't know what laws are you referring to. I'm asking. I don't know.
I'm going to put that on you.
Okay.
Right? You're the gun guy.
I am a gun guy.
You're an NRA guy.
I am no longer an NRA guy.
Okay, but still, like, I mean, these are things, like,
okay.
With you being a gun guy, like, I knew that was coming, and that's kind of on you, Right? Like, so, and I'm putting it on you as, like all right. I'm not going to give it to you. You need to go find it.
Okay.
Right? That's how important it is. So, what in all, why am I telling you all this? Because, so, given this country's history, everything I just told you, and all that shit you can go look up. Not, it's really not hard. It's a okay. Google search away.
I mean, I understand. I'm not trying to blindside you. I don't know these
right.
things.
I'm blindsiding you, which that's kind of part of the problem that I'm blindsiding you, right?
Well, I can guarantee you at the gun clubs I've belonged to, this is not something we talked about.
Weird.
Yeah, shocking.
Okay, but here's the point. With our country's history with gun control, why the fuck am I going to give up my gun rights after what all has happened over the last 100, 200 fucking years? Why would I give up my gun rights when so many people fought for them, so many people fucking died for them? Right? Including Martin Luther King, including Malcolm X. Right? So you want me to give them up after they fought for him? Also, at the same time, Democrats, progressives, everyone, right? Like everyone on the left, all these Democratic candidates are saying white nationalism is on the rise. Neo-Nazis right. are sure. on the rise. Right?
You have I think they can back that up.
Right? Like it's on the rise, right? The FBI came out and said white nationalism, hate crimes, neo-Nazis, people claiming the Klan is on the rise. And at the same time, those same people telling me that shit is on the rise are saying, we need better gun laws. Here's the thing. The Ku Klux Klan or anyone in these groups aren't going to follow the laws that you implement. But when you implement these laws, whose gun are they coming to take first? Mine. So you can fuck all the way off with this whole thing about gun laws. You can fuck all the way off with, well, you don't need an AR-15. Because let me tell you this. Bubba and them, with the Confederate flag coming in their lifted truck, right? When they decide that they have free reign after Trump is reelected, you think that they're coming with just a little short grip P-whatever? Like, they're not coming with a fucking pea shooter. Right, they never have. History said they don't come with the least effective weapons. They come with a lot of the most effective weapons. So I want the most effective weapons to defend myself from the assholes that the progressives and the Democrats are telling me are growing in mass.
I understand what you're saying. This is, you know, you want to say I'm having a white privilege moment when I say what I'm about to say. Fine, call me out on that. But I don't know of a single Democratic candidate who's ever said, we want to take away your guns. They've said they want to put restrictions on certain things. And the things that I personally have spoken out, I've never even said take anything away. My point has always been, don't tell me an AR-15 is a hunting rifle. It's not. It's a weapon designed
for military. I am talking about hold up in my house and I need to be able to shoot a lot of people. I am not a sniper. I am not a trained shooter. I'm not a trained target. Like, I need a lot of bullets to shoot at people who may be shooting at me. And yes, if I have to shoot more than 10 rounds and I'm in the hell of a... Yeah, I'm over my head.
Nice. Yeah, okay.
You're goddamn right I am, because I got a history of a whole lot of fucking white people on fucking horses and in trucks and everything else showing up at one family's house to take them out and moving on to the next one. There's a fucking history of it. So this idea that, well, if I have that... No, fuck that. I want all the bullets. I want all the bullets and I want the most effective gun that is good at killing a lot of people. Yes. That's what okay. I want.
All right. I mean, this took a turn I wasn't expecting, but what you're saying, I understand your logic. And again, as a nearly 50-year-old white guy who's in a pretty safe neighborhood, I don't think about that shit. Fine. We think differently. And I'm not trying to say, like, your thinking is wrong. I literally cannot put myself in your shoes from that perspective.
Fair.
Which is not to diminish it.
But I mean,
I may be making your point for you on that.
To a degree, you are. But it's fine.
I'm just speaking honestly, which is what we do. But to say that, well, these Democratic candidates are a threat to your guns, I think is a stretch.
Joe Biden has said people shouldn't have AR-15s, right?
Joe Biden, Cory Booker, Kamala Harris, Elizabeth Warren, they've all said that
Beto O'Rourke has finally faded away and gone away, but him and Eric Swalwell have said things like, well, we're just going to come to your house and take it. Right.
They have said that, and they're gone now.
Right. And others have said, well, these are the, you know, we need to take this, we need to limit that. Okay, that's fine. But no, it's actually, to me, it's not fine. And I think that there's a legitimate argument that, like, as a monolith that black people need to understand, you understand your history, and all of a sudden that argument for gun control does not feel and it does not look good. And I have every right to be skeptical of people standing on stage in positions of power in politics and in government, sitting there talking and saying, we're going to take guns because it's going to make you safer, especially when they're not actually talking about making me safer. Right, this only really comes up when there's a school shooting and it's white kids in the suburbs getting shot. Right, that's how they use it and they politicize it. So I don't buy it. Right, I don't buy it that it's for me. I buy it because it plays well.
Well, and it plays well in large urban centers, right? New York City, where guns are essentially impossible to get anyway. Those folks buy into that. I'm from Buffalo. I can tell you that the SAFE Act in New York is a garbage law that I've criticized roundly. Forced through by Andrew Cuomo, the governor of New York, because it's a dumb law and it does exactly what I've said gun control advocates would never do, is insert something that stupid. And you said to me, do my research. If you don't know that law, look it up. I'm not going to go through the details, yeah, but it's fucking dumb. We have. Well, I'm saying you. I'm saying people listening. I'm not going to go through the details. I want to move on, and I want to move on to something Joe Biden said, because you said
Did his eye stay in?
Was that?
Did his eye stay in his head?
It did. But he also said that marijuana is a gateway drug. Now, there was a big move in the marijuana or cannabis legalization. If it's going to happen, one step that needs to happen has occurred. The House committee voted. What?
I mean, let's talk big state. I mean, what needs to happen? It needs to be passed by the entire House.
It does. Right? But this step had to happen first. And where, okay. So let's just say what happened. The House marijuana bill passed with a 24-10 vote. It would remove it from the controlled substance schedule list. It would expunge convictions based on marijuana possession, and it would impose a 5% federal sales tax on it. Yesterday, I went out for drinks with a person that you're not particularly fond of, and she's very non-political, and she knew about this. So I think the word's out there. But this is a step. I'm calling it a big step. You're saying it's not. You're right. It has to get through the House. Then it has to get through the Senate. But I think we are closer to cannabis legalization now than we have ever been or have been since it became illegal. And it will not shock me if this is a major political football coming into 2020.
I think you're wrong on it being a major political football, because I think that GOP, Trump, and company want to downplay this. I think if they were smart, they would play it up. I just don't think that they're smart to do it. Right? I just don't think they're smart enough to do it. I've said for a long time that if, like, all bets are off, if Trump can, during his administration, get marijuana legalization through. I think that's a huge thing, a huge win for him. But what clouds it is the partisan pettiness that exists in strictly in the Congress and strictly in the Senate, right? Dems control the Congress, Republicans control the Senate, and I think that literally because it's coming from a Democratic controlled Congress, the Senate, it will sit on Mitch McConnell's desk and he will say fuck off.
And I
like
think this might
everything
be
everything else.
That's true of almost everything. I think this might be one of the issues, because I think it impacts Kentucky a lot.
I think that he's willing to be with it.
Well,
he passed the farm bill.
Right.
They've got, like, I mean, and
hemp is now legal, which was stupid that it was ever
but
illegal.
The reason why is because the hemp that they're producing, right?
Yeah.
And so I think that
there's so much money in this, and
I fine, but there's also plenty of money against it.
And that's a great point. We had this conversation obviously off air yesterday, and I didn't agree with you, but you're right. I mean, I think there's so much money in cannabis legalization that will push these politicians, but you are correct. Big pharma, private prisons, law enforcement, they are all going to push against this.
And they're all massive lobbies.
And they are right. and alcohol.
Right. I mean, they're
you are correct.
They're all massive lobbies that have money that can throw just as much money as anybody investing in pot can.
You are correct. You are correct.
I agree with you, follow the money, but where is the money coming from? Right? And who has more of it? Like, I mean, and your point yesterday wasn't wrong, that listen, a ton of people smoke, right? Like 70% of the population supports this. right? But politicians aren't, they as much as they are controlled by being reelected, they're not worried about me individually. If I walk into, what's our guy downtown, Portman, if I walk into Rob Portman's office, he's not going to give a fuck what I say. But if I tell him that I am from such and such lobbying firm and I've got, you know, a check in my hand for however many, $90,000, and I want to have a conversation with him about XYZ, he is going to have that conversation with me, right? And but I can also, but if I walk in with 200, 500, 1,000 voters, he's going to say, all of you go away, leave me an email, leave me a voicemail, whatever, we'll get back to you.
Please call, yeah.
God bless America. Right? Like, right. I mean, like, so the idea that, well, you know, most of the population wants it, Congress isn't going off of what we want, right? They're going on what they get paid for.
Sure. Yeah, no doubt. And I, it'll be interesting to see which money wins out. The reason I think that it could be interesting is because I think alcohol and tobacco and maybe even pharma have already invested a ton of money into cannabis because they see the future coming.
Maybe, and but they also have so much money that they can literally, they can invest in things to literally kill them.
Okay, that's true, if they want to. It's going to be interesting, but this to me is a maybe it's a first domino, but it's a domino to fall.
Listen, it is an important step, but I think that it is, I just want it to be very clear that you have a very long and obstacle-laden path before you get to the ultimate end result, which is legalization,
and
de-scheduling, expungement, tax incentive, right? I mean, because there's also incentives in this bill that would incentivize states to expunge records, right? I mean, because the states
make
don't
them do it.
The states don't have to, and they can't make them do it, but it incentivizes them with air quotes. And also, what this also does is now it takes a business that is all cash, right? I went out to Las Vegas. I went to Planet 13. Which is one of the, it is the biggest dispensary, I think, in North America or maybe the world. It's massive, right? It is massive. It is a huge warehouse. It's so big that they have a drone that's the size of a Power Wheels car. It's like a blimp that flies around. They've got a DJ playing music. I saw the largest money counting machine I've ever seen in my life because
it's big all cash.
It is all cash, right? I went in there and I may or may not have purchased something. And I bust out my wallet, and I pulled out my card, and the guy looked at me like I was fucking crazy, and I'm like, I actually know why you're looking at me that way. And fortunately had the correct amount of cash to purchase what I was there to purchase.
Okay. That was the worst defense ever.
I'm not defending anything.
That was the worst deflection ever that turned into an admission. Before we close out here, I need the world to know that there are certain things that you react to that I find hilarious. Most recently, your reaction to the Elon Musk announcement of...
Jim, let me tell you something.
Oh, no. Here we go.
Let me tell you something.
Get ready for this. He has no bottle caps.
I have been looking at things... Like, I love tech. Like, tech is great. Right? Right? I've become a little bit disinterested in Apple's... You know, their big releases and their big announcements and unveilings because, I mean, they've grown a little bit stale. It was cool at first, but now, you know, I mean, you basically know what you're going to get. But it's cool to see, you know, Google does it. All these, they all do it and they watch them. You know what? You know what they do? They put them on at reasonable times, right? Right? Like, even if they're on the West Coast, right? Everything on the West Coast, I can see it by noon or 3 o'clock, right? Right? And that's cool, right? No matter what it is, like chances are if they're going to release it, they do it in the middle of the day and it's great and people do write-ups on it. It's a cool thing. That's fucking great. But then there's...
Here it comes.
But then there's Elon Musk. Then there's Elon Musk.
So let me tell
you, so let me give you a little backstory. So Elon Musk, he's got Tesla and he's got the electric cars and those are all great, right? And I, for a long time, have said, listen, you give me an electric truck... that, you know, I don't have to worry about fuel. Don't give me that fucking flex fuel E85 ethanol bullshit. You know, give me a full electric truck like the Tesla cars or the, you know, Volt or whatever. And I'd be in, especially if you can do it under $70,000. So Elon Musk comes out and says, yeah, I'm going to do a truck. And I've been waiting. And finally, you've got the unveiling. It's coming out. And when is it? 11 fucking o'clock at night. 11 o'clock at night because Elon Musk has got to be fucking fancy and great and wonderful and all this other bullshit, right? Because he's so different, right? Because he's just such a, he's such a renegade scientist, badass. He's a, caught myself. Either way. So this motherfucker waits until 11 o'clock at night, right, to unveil this truck, which I'm like, I wasn't going to wait up for it. I was already pissed about it.
I knew you would cave.
But I wait up for it. Actually, I didn't wait up for it. I actually fell asleep, and then I woke up at like 10:45, so I'd missed the game and all that shit. And he rolls this fucking thing out. And aside, I'm already pissed that it is fucking 11:15, right? And I got to get up and go to the gym at 5:30 in the morning. But then it's like what he rolled out, it looked like a fucking door jam combined with wheels, and it looked like something from Total Recall or Blade Runner. Like literally, like it looked like it, not the new ones, not Total Recall with the remake with the Irish guy or the Blade Runner with the blonde guy in, like a couple years ago. No. It literally looked like some, like a prop vehicle from the fucking 80s. Like, I've never been so fucking pissed at someone I don't fucking know in my entire fucking life. This asshole tells me he's going to give me a truck, and he doesn't give me a truck. It's not even a fucking car. It doesn't even look fucking real. Okay. Now, that being said,
I had to hear this rant yesterday before it got unveiled.
Okay, so here's the deal, though. The actual specs on the truck are ridiculous.
No, like a 2.960 second. Sorry, right. 60 miles an hour, 2.9 seconds.
Zero to 60 in basically 3 seconds. The material,
which is like Corvette speed.
Right. The material that it's made out of is basically bulletproof, except for the windows. But they're working on that.
Ironic.
You know, they threw these giant ball bearings, and they said the windows won't break.
You know, you won't need guns if you got a bulletproof truck.
I don't have a bulletproof house, motherfucker. So. I mean, so what the truck can do in terms of, like, speed, and they didn't talk about really off-road capabilities, but pure size, like, I mean, I wouldn't have an argument about fitting in it, that's for sure. It's got an auto drive feature, which, I mean, I think all Teslas have, but they're working on a full-time auto pilot, whatever.
Right.
But I know it's got, like, you could do it over short distances. They're working on all that shit, but I mean, the specs on it are interesting. But so what I need now is I need some of these other companies to step their game up and really kind of match it.
So you're going to hate Elon Musk and still get what you
want?
Well,
I mean, the reality is listen, competition breeds better engineering.
Agreed.
Over time.
Absolutely.
Now, part of the problem is capitalism, everyone trying to be the first. So some steps are usually missed, but everybody is missing the steps because everybody's trying to be the first. But the science and everything behind it is the same, but they fuck up on the details, right? So what he's got, like the base premises of what he's doing sounds really good. There's another company called Rivian that's...
Oh, there's a Ford. I'm like...
No. Rivian is a company that, like, so they have two vehicles that they're looking to start producing this year. One is a truck, one is an SUV. The SUV looks somewhat like a Range Rover. And the truck looks like a truck, an actual truck, right? A luxury kind of high-end truck, and the starting price is literally $70,000, which is my cutoff, right? Because for $70,000, I can get a really badass, just regular combustion truck. But I think the fact that they're working with this is important. Like we need somebody else to step up, like Ford, GM, Dodge. They say they're working on it, but they're clearly not motivated to really do this, right? Like, they're doing it because they feel they have to, but I don't think they want to. Like, Elon Musk wants to do this. Yeah. The Rivian company, they want to do it. That's all they have, so they better do it. Now, there's some issues with their model in terms of, like, their business model, but they want to do it. Like, I'm just serious that Elon Musk did that in terms of a design. It is fucking awful.
And
it's a polygon! Because it looks like something from fucking like some game from Atari.
I only saw the like mock-ups. I didn't see the actual vehicle. Your fury about this is hilarious to me. And so one other thing that I want to get into.
Yeah, do that.
All right, so we're going to shut it down now because we've got real lives and schedules, or at least Steve does. but anyway, we're at Whiskey Congress.
Get a job, Jim.
I have a job, bitch. There's a bunch of stuff I want to talk about. There's a bunch of sports stuff I want to talk about. But we'll try to do a bonus episode.
We'll definitely do a bonus episode. Obviously, we're not going to do it tonight, but we'll get a bonus episode for you. So whenever you
look
get
for this on Sunday, and then look for that on Tuesday or Wednesday.
Yep.
We are out. We are at Whiskey Congress on all social media, Instagram, Twitter, jim@whiskeycongress.com if you want to email me, steve@whiskeycongress.com if you want to email him. Thank you for listening. Interesting show. We are out.